From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 28th day of June 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds of Windsor, Illinois, should join us to take a look at the cash grain markets. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast. It's going to be hot. That we'll hear about with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And along the way, I'll update you on all the agricultural news, and we'll recap what the RVO and RFS decisions by US EPA and that proposal might mean for ethanol going forward, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Although today, Dan, you've been traveling, and I take it you and Kurt Kimmel, fellow colleague there, at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, are hashing things out this afternoon. How are things there?
Yeah, we've been talking about it. Market really showed a lot of weakness here today, and I don't know if it's telling us if somebody knows what the numbers are or not tomorrow morning, but this market's been awfully weak, and it's just been an observation of mine over the years that stocks reports and acres reports usually help explain why the market performed the way it did over the past month, more so than what it tells you it's going to do for the next 30 days. So I do understand the uncertainty with tariffs and the China situation is a negative influence. But the way the market has performed, it wouldn't surprise me tomorrow to see some bearish numbers clear across the board. That would just be my guess. The other thing I think, I know the Trump tariff deal is what everybody's talking about, but I talked to a lot of my old friends that's on the commercial side of the equation here. And during the month of April, May, they were able to buy enough corn and soybeans to fill their needs, both on exports and processing needs, all the way into new crop harvest. So I think part of it is repercussions from last year's record crop. It just kind of came into the market sooner than it normally does. Everything this year seems to have kind of come early. And then I think when you add that to the generally favorable weather that we've had, I know that there's areas that probably they don't consider themselves having favorable weather. It may be too wet. They may have some drowned ponds and this and that. But when you get the June rains like what we've had over the past couple of weeks, it's real difficult to get the market to do anything but go down. Now, a crop has been made, and like I told you last week, we can argue whether or not the corn yield is 170 or 180, probably till the cows come home, and we're not really going to know until the combines roll. And that same way with the beans. The bean yield, we can argue whether it's 47 or 53, but a crop has been made, and once a crop has been made, and then when you take into account the carryover that we're carrying over this year, I think that has a lot to do with what this market is performing. And I'm real curious to see what tomorrow's numbers say, because I remember back in March, everybody was kind of poo-pooing the acreage numbers and said, oh, we're missing 3 million acres or so. I just wonder if those 3 million acres show up tomorrow. And then tomorrow we'll have a real good idea on stocks report, and being three quarters of the way through the marketing year, if USDA is understating the crop, that's going to show up tomorrow with a much bigger stocks report number, a June 1st stocks number, than what the trade has been trading. So I think tomorrow's report may help explain some of this bearishness. I do agree the China thing has been a big negative, but I don't think you can blame it all on China. I think something in the supply-demand balance sheets, we're going to find out tomorrow, that's different than what the trade has been looking at, Todd.
Well, let's take up the acreage report just a bit, because between the corn and the soybeans, the trade estimate is an increase of, 500, 700, so about 1.2 million acres. You say 3 might be available there. The trade clearly is thinking another 500,000 acres maybe for corn and 700,000 more for soybeans or thereabouts. That could trigger, if it's really twice that much, that could trigger some real potential problems, unless it's been built in, as you're suggesting, to the market already. And given today's action, I think you're looking at corn as opposed to soybeans for the potential for acreage to increase?
Yeah, well, I think they both could. I do know that the northern part of the Corn Belt had problems getting their crop in, but there were people in the central and southern areas that said, hey, that's an opportunity for me to plant more corn. What they maybe lost up north, they could have gained somewhere in the central and southern part of the growing region. That's what we're going to find out tomorrow. And I've been through enough of these June 30th reports that anything can happen. We may come in and everything's on the low side and we go limit up and we don't look back. Or I think more so if it shows larger acres and then maybe more supplies. I think that's been built in. I think when you look at record crop rating levels, and I am the first to criticize everybody using crop rating levels, because I think that's a poor man's way of trying to forecast yield, but they do it. The trade uses it. They plug it into their models. And when you start looking at crop rating levels, that's the best we've seen in 15 or 20 years. And then you take into account that the weather we've had, there's maybe a little threatening weather coming at us here over the next few days, but I think we got a cold front coming in after it. The yield is still yet to be determined. You know, the corn yield still to be determined by July weather. The soybean yield is still to be determined yet by August. But if you assume that we're going to have something close to normal, you got to plug in some pretty lofty yields. I'm scared to death what that August crop report is going to say, because population counts are real strong. I mean, I've been sitting up here in the Quad Cities for the last week, and the crop on our farm is way better than last year. And last year we got 288 bushel corn out of it. So I think that may be hard to beat, but the crop looks awfully good for this time of year.
Well, we'll talk about it more after the USDA reports, and you and I'll get to talk about it tomorrow morning at Assumption Fest. I'm really looking forward to having you. Make sure Kurt knows where we're going too, since you're there in his office. And Kurt Kimmel and Ellen Dearden and Kim Holzapfel there at Assumption Fest for breakfast tomorrow morning. And can't wait to talk to you then.
Very well. I'm looking forward to seeing all of my friends in that Christian County, Shelby County area. There's in Assumption. I got my cowboy hat on. It's supposed to be, 95 tomorrow, so it's going to be a hot one.
not at 7 o'clock or 8:30 in the morning. It's not going to be that warm, so we should be good. You didn't bring your spurs with you, did you?
Well, I got my cowboy boots. I'm debating about whether to wear my cowboy boots with my shorts on, or should I put on a pair of pants?
You go comfortable. Whatever's good for you. All right. Thanks, Dan. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Okay, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan will be with us tomorrow at Assumption Fest for breakfast. If you're planning on going, breakfast is from 7 to 9. That's open and free to everyone. We will be on stage around 8:30 in the morning, and I'll have, of course, Dan and Kurt Kimmel, Ellen Dearden, and Kim Holzapfel with us. Prior to that, David Brown from Decatur, farm broadcaster, WAND, will be up emceeing most of the event, and Rodney Davis, a representative from the area, will be there too. So if you're around and want to come out, Assumption Fest tomorrow morning, that's south of Decatur in Assumption, Illinois, will be in the tent directly across from the John Deere dealership. That's the Sloan's dealer there in Assumption. In today's agricultural news, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue appeared on CNBC earlier today to discuss the trade dispute with China. He says farmers are true patriots.
Well, obviously there's anxiety, as there should be. There's legitimate anxiety when you see prices depressing. But farmers are resilient. They understand that China has not been playing fair. They're patriots, but they also know that patriotism can't pay the bills, and that's where they're concerned.
Perdue says the president has told him to make a plan for mitigation if the trade dispute with China cannot be settled, especially for soybeans and other agricultural products. However, it wasn't until the second time he was asked what that mitigation might look like that he took the topic up, and even then he gave an answer that he's been giving for a while, that there are tools in the USDA's box that they can use. He's just not willing to say which ones.
Again, the USDA has tools that in our toolbox. We are not disclosing all those right now. The market's dynamic. We have to determine what are trade disruptions or what are normal market volatility in order to make those calls. We're calculating the component of trade disruptions on a weekly basis and making the administration known.
The next big hurdle at this point in trade relations with China comes up on the 6th day of July, when trade tariffs from the United States would be put into place, and the response from China would follow immediately. Well, let's stay with the effect of communist countries on U.S. agriculture. Here's a different take on the farm bill. The timing of the vote of the Senate farm bill depends on whether Senate ag leaders can hash out a deal with Senator Marco Rubio from Florida. He's a Republican. Though leaders have been pushing for a vote this week, Rubio threw up a roadblock on Wednesday over a provision that would promote agricultural trade with Cuba. Rubio declared he'd block any new amendments to the bill unless the Senate strikes a proposal from Senator Heidi Heitkamp that would allow USDA funding for foreign market development programs to be spent in that nation, or until senators adopt his proposal to ban U.S. taxpayer dollars from being spent on businesses owned by the Cuban military. As of about 1 o'clock this afternoon Central Time, Senator Pat Roberts was still staying mum as to how the next few hours might work out and whether the farm bill will be able to be taken up and a resolution can be put into place for this and other issues. One of which was put forth by Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa. He tweeted this earlier in the day. Good news. It looks like we're on our way to the Senate adopting my amendment on payment limits in the farm bill, so only real family farmers will receive them. So much common sense. Well, Grassley's provision would change the actively engaged rule set by USDA, which determine whether someone can qualify for up to $125,000 in commodity subsidies. Grassley's amendment would limit the number of managers eligible for subsidies to one per farm, with a goal of preventing people who are not involved in farming on a day-to-day basis from receiving payments. And finally today, what might be the impact of the retirement of Justice Anthony Kennedy from the Supreme Court? Well, you might expect a shift to the right when it comes to environmental issues. During his career, Kennedy's view of which streams and wetlands should be protected under the country's foremost water law reigned because he stood between conservatives who wanted a limited definition and liberals who wanted an expansive one. In a 2006 case, Kennedy took the centrist stance that any creek, bog, or marsh that has a significant nexus to downstream navigable waters warranted federal protection. That opinion has been broadly viewed by lower courts as the one to follow. A new justice could shift that opinion to the right. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, you know, the biofuels proposal US EPA put forth this week appears to give the agency authority Congress did not intend. The proposed rulemaking asserts EPA's right to extend small refinery waivers without reallocating the congressionally mandated gallons. In this case, that would be corn-based ethanol blended into the nation's regular gasoline supply at the rate of no more than 15 billion gallons annually, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Herwin.
It seems like that could be challenged in court, that it's easy to establish that was the most important policy decision that the EPA had to make for this rulemaking. And they basically said, no way, no how are we going to listen to anybody, and we're just going to charge ahead. I'm not sure that they will be able to make that hold.
The EPA believes it has the right to grant small refinery waivers without reallocating those gallons. It has already granted some 1.5 billion gallons worth of ethanol waivers. In this way, it's capable of creating rules that meet the legal requirements of the RFS, but then allow it not to be met via a loophole. Whether that loophole remains open is a political and legal question with big ramifications.
That's an interesting question. If the zero reallocation holds, this will be a major defeat for the ag interest and Senator Grassley, because we will have gone to a situation where the small refinery exemptions function effectively as a form of general waiver authority for the EPA to roll back the mandates.
Clearly, Herwin goes on to say, Congress did not explicitly give that authority to the EPA. His view is that it will be challenged in court, if necessary, and then thrown out. Let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. We're now joined by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, so tell me a little bit about what your expectations for tomorrow's reports might be.
Well, you know, a person's got to hope that you get some sort of stabilizing influence. I mean, my expectations are that we'll be, somewhere within maybe a 500,000 to 750,000 acres of the 88 million on corn. I think beans have probably got a little more room to go up. I mean, I'm expecting corn to go up. It'll be interesting to see. I'd kind of like to see them go down at this stage, but that would be a tall order on beans to lose bean acres. So I think pretty safe to assume that we're going to be well over 90, maybe over 91. But I think altogether, you're looking at probably a report that no one's going to pay great deal of attention to, unless we see some outlier type numbers.
And then in the stocks numbers, you don't have any expectations outside of the norm for tomorrow's number either?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see near the drawdown that you would need. Obviously, with soybeans, considering corn as well, we're still running a little bit behind, shipment-wise. I think that it's a little bit concerning. I don't think that you're going to see the usage that we would like to see, or at least enough to be able to kind of change the course of the direction we're heading, given all the fear with trade talk and the weather, basically the ideal weather that most people have been able to experience so far this growing season.
Matt, let's talk a little bit about what your marketing ideas are at this time. I take it producers probably should just stand aside at this point.
Yeah, you know, obviously this is a tough game right now. Producers are a little bit bewildered. I would say that the cash grain holder is the person that is really taking it on the chin in this environment. There's just so much corn out there, especially the basis hasn't been able to improve, anywhere near what you would need to see with the kind of collapse that we've seen in the futures market. At this stage of the game, you're going to have to make a game plan on what's going to happen. But a report like tomorrow can certainly turn the tide. A couple of weeks of hot, dry weather in July could turn the tide. but at this point, I see no issue, or no, I would have issue, I guess, with producers stepping in and making panic sales. I think we need to kind of let the dust settle a little and hope that we get a little bit of support tomorrow.
If things do not change and status quo is what we end up with after tomorrow, what can a producer do now, if anything, about looking forward into the harvest season?
Well, I'm going to make an assumption that people, I think it's been widely reported that producers have taken advantage of some of the higher prices we had just 3 weeks ago and previous to that. And if a producer has any sales on at all at this point, I would tend to think that we're going to have to maybe come around to the idea that we may have to do a lot of marketing after harvest this year, which isn't a terrible thing. I definitely don't want to be making sales at levels that could not be profitable, especially in the event that we don't have a 250 yield like everyone seems to be banking on at this point. I want to base it on profitability.
Thanks so much, Matt. That, of course, is Matt Bennett with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds. This is the closing market report for Thursday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Tenura at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. I know today farmers are beginning to get concerned about the heat coming into the Corn Belt. You've been watching this. What can we say about the heat, how long it will last, how deep it will be?
It's going to last for about 7 to 10 days the way it looks now. We'll see high temperatures into the 90s on most days over the next 7 to 10 days, which will take us into about July 7th or 8th. Now, high temperatures in the 90s are not all that unusual. Normal highs for this time of the year would be in the lower to middle 80s, so only a little bit above normal there. The potential issue, though, regards the nighttime temperatures. We're going to have a very muggy air mass in place over this entire period, and that will make it difficult for minimum temperatures to fall much below 73 to 74 degrees. Most of the time we'll have lows between about that level on the cool side and 80 degrees on the warm side. Those types of minimum temperatures are around 10 to 15 degrees above normal. So we're talking about some fairly significant warmth at night. When we look at overall how this might affect corn and soybeans, we know that it's truly the mean temperature that means the most. In other words, if it's real hot during the day and real cool at night, those two kind of offset each other because the mean ends up in the middle. If we're in the other scenario where we have fairly cool afternoon temperatures, but we have very warm nighttime temperatures, we end up in about the same spot, right in the middle there, which is about normal. But what we're talking about here is that we're going to be a little bit above normal on the high side during the day, nothing too unusual there, but those nights will be way above normal. And that'll make that mean temperature much higher than it should be.
I know some have been looking out to a cooler weather pattern of maybe 10 days out. Do you see that? And will that add some relief to the process?
Well, I think that's where all the uncertainty is at the moment. The reason it's turning hot is because we're going to have a very large upper level high form. This high will become so large that it will start to move to the west. That's unusual. We call that a retrograding high. The way it looks now is that this high will move far enough to the west by the end of next week, and more so next weekend, to dislodge cooler air across central Canada. That should drive a cool front into the Corn Belt sometime next Saturday or Sunday. But the big uncertainty regards, is that a part of a large pattern change, or is that just a cool front that's just going to go by and then the heat comes right back in? It's real hard to say which one it is right now, but it's going to be very difficult to call for a major pattern change when the warmth that we're seeing now and we're going to see over the next 10 days is essentially part of the same pattern that we've seen since about May 1st. So it's hard to be a hero and start saying, well, this is the end of that pattern because we can see the models are kind of showing it turning cooler in 10 days from now. You have to consider that it's been warm for a while. What's happening now is nothing new. It's essentially an extension of the same thing. And we've seen some cool fronts here and there. We'll even see one in the northern Corn Belt this weekend. But that's not part of a big pattern change. So, Todd, that's what everybody's going to be thinking about here tomorrow and all the way through next week as well.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Mike Tenura, of course, is with T-Storm Weather. He is in Chicago. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.